You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
So tell me about yourself.
I am Craig from Radiant Creators, and our mission, what we do is we interview inspiring people to inspire others, and that really ranges no bounds within reality, and you're inspiring, because what you're doing is important, and it's helping people, and want to help get the word out there.
So you created Radiant Creators, that's your creation, or...
Yeah, and Erin Schimmervine, she's the other Radiant Creator, so there's two of us. We can get started, and I'm just going to read. I usually avoid reading on the show, but I'm going to read just a little bit, just so people have an idea who you are. So this is from your About page on your YouTube, and it says, Leah and I are two humans who no longer support the inhumane, oligarchic, empire model of destroying our planet and our true nature as human beings. As activists, we decided to do something about it, so we opted out of our former lives to begin anew. We are currently transforming pristine alpine wilderness in Colorado into a self-sustained homestead and organic farm in preparation for the upcoming collapse. We plan on developing and executing every single step of the process in open source format for the benefit of all humanity. That's what you're doing. So, you know, along with that, maybe fill us in a little bit. Who are you? And the Oppenheimer Project, you're actually talking to us from Colorado up in the mountains right now, right?
Yes, that's exactly where I am, Southwest Colorado. I was born in 1971. I went to university in 1989. I got a scholarship to graduate school. Now, let me just go back because I think it's important. When I went to undergraduate in 1989, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I was indoctrinated in public school. And basically what I learned from there was that I needed to make money. So I'm sitting in college. I really don't want to do anything that involves making money. So I just decide to go into economics because that's what, you know, you learn about money. So I became like a business major, and it was miserable. Every single second of college sucked. And about my second year, I'm about to fail out, and I'm in the campus bar sitting next to what appears to be Jerry Garcia. And he's like, what's wrong, man? And I'm like, college sucks. My major is business, and I effing hate business. I hate every class, every person in my class. Basically, all I wanted to do was party and drink. And that's what I told him. I'm in college. And he says, well, what do you like to do? And I said, well, I'm getting into rock climbing. I'm pretty good. I'm one of the top climbers in the country. I like to fish and hunt and go out into nature. And he said, well, you should become a geologist. And that moment, it hit me because when I was 12, I took that test in grade school where you figured out what you're supposed to do. And it said I was supposed to be a paleontologist. And at that day with that guy, Jerry Garcia, I was like, yeah, you're right. And he introduced himself. He was the head of the geology department, Peter Goodwin, who became my mentor and probably the leading voice in why I got the only scholarship to graduate school there, because I wasn't the top student. So that's my history in academia. I quickly found that the theory we were working with was not accepted by the mainstream. And that was my introduction to becoming a target. So at the very beginning, once I left high school, I got into the real world and I became a target from the mainstream. They didn't like our theory. It went against their ideas. It was cutting edge. And they couldn't argue it because everything we studied was supporting our hypothesis. And it was called the pack hypothesis, punctuated aggregational cyclicity, pack. And that basically where we're at today would be the Doug Vogt cycle, a cosmic catastrophe cycle, a magnetic reversal cycle. They're all related because my work geologically brought me all around the world, mostly around the North America. And I found this cycle throughout all of geologic history, everywhere in every basin, happening every 24,000 years, approximately. We were calling it the precessional cycle. And that really led me into my entire journey to where I am today, decades ago. So there's lots of spiritual journeys in there. I got incarcerated for a little bit, maybe 10 years for growing cannabis. I suffered from extreme alcoholism and depression for decades. And, you know, we all have a journey, and here I am. So you've seen what it took for me to get here in a really tiny snippet. If you wanted the true history of what I've been through, it would take, you know, a novel. But that's, you know, the summation.
And when did you actually get the Oppenheimer Ranch up there? I mean, how many years or months have you been up there homesteading?
So this is not clear for a lot of people. The Oppenheimer Ranch project was started by Leah and I around 5 years ago. When we met, we started discussing the idea. She had a homesteading plan that was her dream, and I had a little slightly different plan. But our both ideas were moving in the same direction. So we discussed it for less than a year and immediately started looking for property based on geophysical security and geopolitical security. So that means safety from natural disasters and safety from the powers that be, as well as the population, because we're dealing with 8 billion people that are brainwashed, running around the planet, you know, trying to backstab everyone else to get what they need. As soon as the electricity gets cut, it's going to be a zombie apocalypse, just like we've been prepared for.
Yeah, shows like The Walking Dead and such, there's something very, very eerie about them. Like, our whole hang-up the last, I don't know, 50 years or more on zombies. And it just seems to get more intense. Like, you look at The Walking Dead, and I haven't watched many, you know, hours of it, but having watched some of it, it's kind of a shit show. And it doesn't make any sense where you can, you know, if a zombie bites you, then you become a zombie. But if you blow its head off and it's atomized and there's blood spray in it everywhere and you're breathing it, that doesn't count. That's not real. So it's just strange. It's maybe I look at things the wrong way, but just scientifically, you know, it's bullshit. But yet it's just a top rated show forever that people can't get enough of. But there's just something in our psyche that's hung up, like you mentioned about zombies. We've been trained to be and trained to expect zombies. And that seems to be like
It's because that the zombie cycle is well known. It's the 400-year grand solar minima cycle is what drives, some call it the civilization cycle. It's how civilizations rise and fall. And layered on that, there's the 1,000-year bond cycle, which is would be equivalent to the rise of Egypt, the rise of Rome, the rise of Mycenaean civilization. Those are on 1,000-year cusps. Extreme warms. We've just come off of the last extreme 1,000-year warming. And so time immemorial, what happens is the destruction of the empire. The empire starts collapsing because the elites are no longer able to keep the population at bay. The food supply dwindles. There's inflation. In this case, in our modern society, the electrical grid and our infrastructure will start to falter. There'll be communities cut off with bridges where they'll have to drive around for hours. Things like that will start to unravel our civilization. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes decades. So certain regions will unravel first, and then there will be a cascading effect. Things will stop being shipped worldwide, and everyone will want to keep their resources. And then once those resources dwindle, you have civil wars locally. So it's an ongoing process. It will take a long period of time. But in our case, in the modern world, it can be accelerated by a solar flare. Every year we have an X flare, on average, from our sun. And for the last 100 years, our sun has been affecting Earth in some way, that the Earth's magnetic field has been waning since 1907. We've known this scientifically, and it's in the last two decades, it's rapidly increasing the amount that it is shutting down, so to speak. And if you project that out linearly, in just a few decades, maybe 2035, the magnetic field on Earth could be down around 10%. Now, if that happens and an X flare comes off the sun, anything that is an electrical grid on our planet will fry, and it will be weeks, months, years to get that back up. And the population simply is not prepared to handle that. And that's where you get all those zombie shows. They're preparing you in plain sight for what you may experience. It's almost like patterning or something like that.
Yeah, and it's strange how many people actually look forward to that. It's, you know, part of sort of the prepper mentality is, I can't wait for the zombies. But I don't know. I'm not sure if they're really got their plans figured out too well, because I don't think it's going to be quite the fantasy that they are imagining. Well, along with the zombie idea, it seems that now something I like about your show. So the Oppenheimer Ranch Project, but you almost do an Oppenheimer Ranch report almost daily, it seems. And this is like 30 or 40 minutes. And you talk about the news as far as the climate news, geopolitical, and you've got, I mean, how many hours a day do you spend getting ready for that report? Because really, it's like our nightly news. We look forward to it and we laugh through the disasters with you. I mean, you have an incredible wit that you bring to it. And it really seems like, are you trying to break people out of being fat, dumb, and happy and mind controlled and maybe freeing them, their human spirits, to be happy, healthy, and wise? Because your daily kind of like disaster report is amazing. It's phenomenal. And it's a lot of work to put together.
Yeah, in the beginning, it was a nightmare. I would be doing retake after retake after retake for 6, 10 hours just to get out that first video. And then after a period of time, 6 months or a year, it became easier. I suffer from ADHD and ADD and PTSD, and I'm hyperactive, and I'm diagnosed as mixed mania, which means I can multitask doing 10 things at once and be very comfortable doing it. I also suffer from the affliction of adrenaline junkie. The first time I ever jumped out of an airplane was the first time I ever felt calm. Most people panic, but the small portion of the population relaxes in those situations. You know, I've had a gun held to my head and I didn't panic. I studied the person's face, and they're in jail forever now because I didn't panic. Because for some reason, which is not good, I'm a danger to myself and others because I don't react like normal humans. So quickly, I was able to develop a technique to get that whole show down in 3 or 4 hours. I can do all the research on all of the networks. I have it set up where I lay out the topics, and I'm slowly arranging them as I'm accumulating them, and I'm going over the show in my head until it's done. I think I have a coherent idea, and then I just quickly run through it in my head, you know, and say a prayer, and then I hit record. And for the last around 6 or 10 months, I rarely feel like I have to stop and start over again. I just keep going. And that is the part of the lesson to be learned, that that's permaculture principles. If you stop and you get hung up on something, it literally could be the end of you. You need to go past that and look for new opportunities and keep moving forward. So even if I make a mistake or I say something incorrect, I'll keep going forward. I'll apologize later. But the point is that there's so much information in the show that someone can get something out of any of it. Like you said, a lot of people may be offended. I have a very difficult time with certain types of empathy because of my time I spent in jail. But I'm very thoughtful and empathetic in my head, but not necessarily on my show, which could be a detriment. But in overall, less than 5% of the people are ever offended, even at my on my worst performance. When I go on those long rants because I am moved from within and I literally go crazy, I feel terrible after that show, and I have to prevent myself from erasing it because I know that if I share that, people, the next day I'll get 10 or 15 emails from rape victims that have never been able to discuss it with anyone else, and they're sending me an email thanking me. So I know that it helps people in certain cases. It offends others. But let me tell you what, for the last 2,000 years, we've been in one of the warmest, most stable climatic regimes over the last 5 million years. And odds are that it is over. So snowflakes need not apply for the future, because those are the people that are going to be liabilities for the rest of the population. We need people that can adapt. We need people that can wildcraft, that can live in a completely new paradigm, one in which the majority of the population doesn't even have the ability to conceptualize. They can't even think about it. As soon as they think about the grid going down, they're like, oh, no, I'm not going to think about that. Oh, my God. If I didn't have my video games or my YouTube or my, oh, my God, what would I do? So we're effed. I mean, so I want more people on our side. And this is my gift. And I affect whoever I affect. Some people who use Jesus affect other people. Some people who don't curse have a different group of people they're affecting. But, I do what I do. I'm not going to change what I'm doing. Like every day I have 5 people telling me how to change my show. The most recent thing is stop cursing and your subscribers will go up. Can you imagine all of the cursing comedians? Pick any of them, starting with Richard Pryor, right? Can you imagine if they stopped cursing? Their career would be over. Their message would be lost. So my talent is my talent, and it's what I do. So I'm going to continue to do it until I'm sick of it. It's a lot of work. I work 3 to 4 hours in the morning answering thousands of emails and messages, and then 3 or 4 hours at night. It's full time for me. It's over 8 hours a day. And then the sunny part of the day is when I farm. But I'm going to try to kind of switch that up and do a little less showtime in the coming future, because I'm trying to have a kid and you know how that works.
Well, definitely. I know many do appreciate the work that you're doing on the podcast, on your reports, because it's essential. And if anybody's offended by it, well, I'd say you need to work on your sense of humor, because a lot of the stuff you say is really funny shit. We love it. I mean, and it's all spontaneity and it's great. I mean, I could quote some of the things, but it's great. People need to listen. And if people are stressed out, if they are offended by you saying, this guy's a prick and he's going to be eaten by his neighbors and stuff like that, then they should take this as training, because this is great stress inoculation. Because if you can't handle Diamond talking shit, which is true, then you're not going to be able to handle your neighbors trying to eat you, because it's coming, people. So and also, if you didn't care about people, you wouldn't do the podcast. You wouldn't do the reports, because it's a pain in the ass and it takes a long time. So, and then also at the end of a lot of them, you say, we love you, you know? So I don't get why people would be offended. I understand it, but toughen up, because if you can't take the podcast, well, don't listen. You're fucked. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, I feel like Nancy Reagan. It's like tough love. It's tough love.
Tough love, Diamond style. I think a great T-shirt for your report would it could say "Dab with Diamond Podcast," "Dab with Diamond Disaster Report."
Yeah, you can't even imagine how many emails I get about that. I'm a drug addict, and there's so these people are so brainwashed that they have no idea what's even coming out of their mouth. Like, I mean, I try to say it enough. Cannabis is the safest plant on earth. It has never, one human has, not a single human has died from cannabis, and thousands have tried to kill themselves with it, but you can. It's not like aspirin or any other pharmaceutical that will kill you. What happens when you ingest cannabis is some people have an effect and some people get paranoid, but everyone gets healed inside. Even if you're paranoid, your body's immune system is achieving homeostasis while you're paranoid. So you're actually healing yourself, even if you're not having a bad effect on your cannabis. There are so many species of cannabis, and it is so unstudied. People should listen to me. I've been working with cannabis since 1989. All the seeds, all the strains, all the varieties. People with cancer, people with debilitating illnesses have all cured themselves with this plant. Why anyone would demonize it is simply the disinformation that they've been brainwashed with. I implore everyone to do research on cannabis. If you can't handle the high and eventually you reach a tolerance, that people like me that ingest large amounts of cannabis daily, we don't get high. That's almost impossible. 1% of my blood is probably cannabis. So we have a high tolerance. But for other people, it helps with stress, mental illness, sleep, all kinds of things. And if you learn how to make medicine with cannabis, you can make skin applications, you can make tincture, you can cure skin cancer, warts, shingles, so many things. Look up Phoenix Tears. It's the Rick Simpson story. The Rick Simpson protocol is how to make the medicine. I supplied the free PDF to everyone online that asked me. And it could change your life. So stop hating on cannabis and start growing it.
Yeah, and people don't have to smoke it and get high. I think a lot of people, when they envision cannabis, they're thinking of people smoking and getting high. And that's fine. One can certainly do that. Not a thing wrong with it in the world. But as far as medicinally, people can take, they can microdose, they can take like a milligram to help sleep. They can take, you can experiment with it. You don't have to go full on and do like a massive bong hit. You know, there's different strains, and I mean, for me, great sleep aid, great stress aid, great creativity aid, and I'm just talking about a couple milligrams, you know, and it is very medicinal now. It's measured. I mean, there's great companies putting out great products. And you guys promote some on your, well, you promote some particular, I think it's a canna, what is it? There's something that you promote on your show.
Well, our main sponsor is Hemp Lucid. And that's a way that you can get cannabis medicine without any THC. This cannabis is being grown near here, about a few hours to the east. The company is in Salt Lake City, and they're friends of the channel. They'll be at LeeCon. Just go to hemplucid.com. But if you want 20% off all their products, just go below any of our video and you click that link. Now, that CBD is now legal throughout all 50 states. So I'm not advocating you grow illegal marijuana. And hemp is also illegal everywhere unless you have a federal license, which you can get in most states, but it costs $500 and then the feds have to come to your property, things like that. So growing cannabis is mostly illegal, mostly everywhere. Hemp is illegal everywhere unless you have a license. But CBD is now legal everywhere, all 50 states. You can mail it, you can give it away. So Hemp Lucid is a way to get the cannabis medicine that they burned out, essentially, all of the cannabinoids that would make you quote unquote high. So there is no, there's no high effect and you get all the medicinal effect. It's a good way to get into cannabis medicine to see if it can help you.
Oh, it definitely is. In one of your, Oppenhauer Ranch reports, I'll call them for lack of a better word, you mentioned number one thing that you want people to get, like the number one thing that they could take away is to take your life back, you know? And I would say, I'd ask actually, how do you define that? Because, I mean, yeah, take your life back. But who's taking it away? What does that look like? How do people start? Well, other than listening to your show.
Yeah, well, so a lot of people have different terms for it. Some people just call it off-grid. But that type of a mindset, you know, you're thinking right-wing extremists with lots of guns and MREs, right, with a bunker. Okay, that is, you know, a group. And again, we're grouping people. I think that that's the wrong thing to do. We're all individuals. We need to realize that we all have individual talents, and none of us are Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, or any of that. These are groups designed by the elites to control you, brainwash you. You have to pay your taxes. You have to pay your insurance. This is all by design so that they can run their big bank. So essentially, you're a slave in their system. Now, to opt out of that system that you've been taught by your parents your entire life is almost impossible. And what I mean, take back your life, is you slowly have to jump into the rabbit hole. Take the red pill. Start doing research and realize that the life you're living is a lie. The mainstream media is just simply a puppet for the corporations. Go look into Monsanto and the revolving door with government. See how the payouts occur. And then once it hits you, there'll be a moment where you're like, oh my God, you'll be disgusted. Then you will have the mindset to opt out. And I call it opt out. You can opt out of this society by slowly pretending it's not there, which is a lifetime. I mean, it's a life mission. You first have to go far away from people and cities. The cities and the people, that energy there is polluted. Not only that, the air and the water is as well. So the further you are away from the plague of humanity that's brainwashed, the clearer your head can get. You need to unplug from electronics. I didn't have a cell phone for a year, 4 years ago. It was impossible at first. And then by the third week, I forgot what a cell phone was for. Because I'm on a mountain. I'm living on a mountain. And I'm digging rivers. And, you know, it's easy to forget about that if you don't have anyone to text again. It's amazing in the town I live in now, our cell phones don't even work unless we drive 20 miles. So you could call me on my cell all day. I will never fucking get the message. And I don't want to, because you don't have anything important to tell me anyway. Almost no one does. What we talk about on a daily basis is vapid bullshit about something we saw on Netflix or Susie's banging Jim at the office and blah, blah, blah. Not a single fucking person is talking about how to grow their own food, that all of the food in the store is contaminated with glyphosate, all of the processed food. Everything you eat is making you sick, and that's why we have hospitals and doctors and cancer treatments. It's because you're an idiot and you didn't take 5 fucking seconds to go research. You are what you eat. So, and if you realize what has happened to the food system over the last 2 decades, you would be sickened by what you eat. If you knew what was in that box, you would throw up. If you knew how those animals were treated, you would never buy those chicken wings. But if you grow your own chickens, you would be happy to euthanize a bird and serve it to your family because you knew what you fed it, you knew how you grew it, and you euthanized it in a halal, holistic, humane way. And you gave that animal the best life it has ever had. Because chickens don't live in the wild, by the way. So all the people are like, I can't believe you eat chickens. Chickens were made to be eaten. There's not a wild chicken. Hello?
There are wild turkeys, though, and they're sneaky. Yeah. Now, that's some seriously difficult hunting. Anybody who's ever gone wild turkey hunting, they're domesticated turkeys are dumb as fuck. But the real turkeys, the wild turkeys, now they're wily.
Not here. And in fact, if turkey season starts in a week, and right in my backyard, because we're a permaculture farm, the turkeys will come in flocks. Now, bunch of people on the mountain here grow barley, and that's all laying there. So as soon as turkey season opens, literally, if you had a shotgun, you could have 40 birds in one area. So in wilderness areas, birds act differently, much differently. Grouse are very easy to approach here. They walk around the ground, and so are the turkeys. You can get within 25 meters of any turkey. And the elk, we have thousands of elk now moving around the valley here. 2,600 people and 14 million elk. One of the reasons we chose this area, there is so much wild food here, and no one from the major cities will be able to come here to hunt it. It's too far away. So all this is ours.
I like it. Yeah, I've always felt that if you don't have deer in your backyard in the mornings, you're living far too close to a city, to society. It's almost like a test for me. And we're not quite there yet. We're living in a rural city, but it's on the agenda to, as soon as we can, also have a residence that is much more like where you're living and keep it, and keep building it. So one thing I noticed about humans, what's that? Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, that's a good spot.
It's a good spot. I mean, the problems we have here with survival is it's like living in a blast furnace. It's friggin' hot in the summer, but I guess that wouldn't be a problem in some cases, but it's a great place. It's just not very high, and it's very hot.
Yeah, a better place, it would be north of Seligman, up in the mountains, a little bit more water, central north, maybe an hour and a half north, up towards the state line, because there's very few people up there.
Oh, it's great. It's amazing. Yeah, you look at Phoenix. Phoenix is pretty populated, of course, and Scottsdale is kind of a suburb. But, yeah, you start going north or you go east from us, and if you go east or south, you're in desert. But you go north, you're just climbing mountains, and it gets quite beautiful. And it's not populated at all. So that's kind of on the agenda, is to have – what do you think of that? I mean, people who are, like, living in two places, two or three places, where maybe you've got your city residence – where you're doing business and you live there for maybe family reasons and such, taking care of people, but you've also got a homestead that you are actively developing in a safe place from there.
I mean, obviously, that's the best suggestion. If you want to take your time to opt out, you can be secretly setting up your opt-out location. But most people aren't financially able to even consider that. There are prepper communities that you can join, become members of. There's even some communities out in your area in Arizona that are prepper communities where you lease an acre of their land for $200 a month, and you're allowed to do whatever you want. So those are good options. And a friend of mine, friend of the channel, Scott, he used to help with the radio show, lives in Tucson. He's doing that. So he has a normal house in Tucson and he has a normal job. But I only think he works 4 days a week now. And then so those 3 days he can bug out and work on his property and get back to the fake job, you know, where he pretends that he cares about what he's doing. So that is definitely the ultimate way to do it. But time is running out. And that's why we started the channel, because you don't have much time. And the more we know, the timeline is shortening. I don't think by 2024 that the majority of the grid on the planet will not be already affected. That's probably a good date to be ready by. And I think by 2023, the grid's going to start failing. And anytime starting now, we're going to see effects on the grid, just like we did a few months ago with a small geomagnetic storm, you know, lighting up power lines in New York and down in Tennessee. There were literally substations exploding with a really low level geomagnetic storm. So these are going to get bigger as we exit cycle 24 into cycle 25 in the next year. So by next winter, we should be coming out of this minimum into cycle 25. And that's when the sun starts kicking up more flares. That'll be another year of our magnetosphere weakening. And I believe that's game on. So if you want to follow how much time you have, follow the grid. When you see cities start frying and failing from geomagnetic storm, and the mainstream might not tell you that that's what's happening. because they seldom make the connection between geomagnetic activity and computer failures or grid failures. It's usually some excuse. Oh, there was a rabbit and somebody chewed the line. Yeah, so don't expect to get the truth, but you can definitely follow the grid.
Something you mentioned about being a prepper, and you can have your guns and bullets and such like that in all of your preps. But you mentioned MREs, and something I've noticed about a lot of preppers is too many damn MREs. They got plenty of guns, they got plenty of bullets, and they got plenty of MREs, but they don't have the Foxfire book set, and they don't know how to grow things. And one of the big red flags that I'm seeing is health amongst preppers. People actually are doing, they're putting some effort towards having a homestead, but their health is shit. And I think that something important about survival is an aspect of, physical resilience. You got to have some strength. You got to be hitting the gym. You got to be doing some running. You got to be doing whatever you're doing, but at least eating healthy, at least living healthy, because, health is our natural state. But if you look at humanity, if you look around right now, oh man, we are not in our natural state. It's pretty damn shocking.
Yeah, I really went deep on the preppers. I generalized them as fat, diabetic, whatevers. And it's not far from the truth, because a lot of these guys have been prepping for decades. They don't exercise and they don't know how to grow food. Now, that's not all of them. Many preppers, I love Prepper Nurse One. He's, active. He's got, he really is. He's learning and expanding and more garden. So some preppers are picking it up. They're catching on. And any good prepper is they know how to wild harvest. That is their main state. Like all of the real, we don't even call ourselves preppers. We're just people that are using all the resources given to us. Like, we all go wild harvest mushrooms around here. We all go wild harvest berries. Most everyone hunts. So, and my neighbor, he's trying to live 100% off of his land. Wild game, what he wild harvests, and what he grows. And everybody should be trying to achieve that. Why would you want to spend 30% of all your money on poisonous food from the store? Almost everything, unless you're buying organic, and we're finding out that almost all organic products are run on the same machines and contaminating all the food. It doesn't matter if it says USDA organic. It doesn't matter. It only matters if you grew it and you know what's on it, or you knew who grew it. So that's why everyone comes and buys our eggs. That's why everyone wants to buy our produce, because we don't have any chemicals here. We use water and rain.
There's somebody we interviewed on the show called Arthur Haynes, and he wrote a book called A New Path. And he termed, I think, what you're doing, being a neo-Aboriginal, being the new Aboriginal.
That's an interesting title. Never heard of it.
But yeah, it's like, so we are the new Aboriginals.
Yeah, everything's a cycle, so... And it is the Aboriginals that know how to live in harmony with their environment. There are no Aboriginal communities with landfills. There are no Aboriginal communities with toxic fracked groundwater, because they know that the food that's coming from the earth is a gift, and they treat it as such. They do not exploit the planet that is keeping them alive. And that is what humanity has lost touch with. We don't care where it came from. We don't give a fuck. I just want more. I want it now. Why don't I have it already?
Yeah. And I think our natural human instincts, which, unfortunately have been put to sleep for many, a great way to reinvigorate your natural human instincts, well, for one thing, is to have a homestead, spend as much time in nature as you can, but also be wild harvesting, be picking the mushrooms. Like here in Arizona, when I first moved here from the Pacific Northwest, I was terrified. I went, oh my God, I live on Mars. With cactus. And I thought there's no food out here. But then once I studied and I learned, the desert, even the high desert, as barren as it looks, it just rains food. I mean, there's mesquite, there's prickly pears, there's lizards, there's rabbits, there's, I mean, it is a very food rich source. It's just hot.
Yeah. So, and if you live in Colorado, you can have this just sitting around. This is just like tons of cannabis. Free. Organic, too. So I got drying racks over here. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. And so, yeah, cannabis is legal there in Colorado. Just like it's completely legal, I think, or?
Yeah. Everyone is entitled to grow their own crop of cannabis. You can trade up to 2 ounces in public. You can give cannabis away to anyone you want for free. You can even charge people to grow cannabis for them. You can't charge them for the cannabis, but all citizens that get green cards and can become compassionate care growers, and they can grow for their neighbors that don't know how to grow food or cannabis. So it's an excellent setup. Not only that, is cannabis is available everywhere. In town, there's like 5 or 6 dispensaries, hundreds of varieties, lots of knowledgeable growers. And it's not an oxymoronic community where I'm at. In some places in Colorado, the cops are anti-cannabis still, even though it's legal. So they're trying to nail you on all the technicalities that they can. But cannabis became legal in Pagosa Springs, where I'm at. The doctor here at Good Earth Meds was the first ever medical dispensary. He sold it out of the back of his car in our town parking lot. And this was voted on by our town and allowed. And one of the first dispensaries ever was here in Pagosa Springs, medical. And that was a long time ago, 15 years ago or longer. And so we kind of are the... Cannabis has always been legal here. Police do not hassle you about growing cannabis or if you have cannabis or any of that, where that's different in other parts of Colorado. So it's very cannabis friendly here. Our hotels, we have cannabis friendly hotels. It's very cannabis friendly.
Well, like you mentioned, in finding the right place to homestead, to live off the land, to do, you know, to live properly, there are areas that are more free than others. And so I'd imagine Colorado is a state that has the proper mentality, the proper, you know, people are more free there. I mean, I moved to Arizona from, you know, Washington State, and in great part, it's because, you know, living in Seattle, you have a real zombie mentality, and it's easy to lose faith in humanity because people are in love with weakness. But you come here to Arizona, and there's a much more dignified culture.
Yeah, all of our neighbors, we run on a cash-free society down here. We barter almost everything. Everyone has a specialty. So if anybody needs anything and they come over, they want my eggs, they don't want to give me money. They ask me, what do I need? And if it's something they have, I'd rather have their soap or their goat milk or than money, because I'd rather work on an actual value system where you're giving me the same value back of something that I don't have already instead of adding the fake money in between, which doesn't make any sense. So, and almost everyone in a period of 3 years, I've got to know up and down a few miles because we're on a dead end road. So we basically have a local economy down here. None of that is taxed. Uncle Sam can kiss my ass. If you go up to the town hall, they say we all need permits down here to be bartering. We should be paying taxes on that. I mean, I just shook my head and I said, are you kidding me? Okay. Yeah. Like we're writing checks, we're writing checks so that we can murder someone.
Yeah.
So we don't write checks down here.
You need to have a ledger for everything that you're bartering so they can tax. Yeah, really. Well, you also have a YouTube channel called Magnetic Reversal News, and something on there that I think is, well, maybe the crux of all of it and a way that people can really start to understand what you're talking about is you've got Prelude to the Adam and Eve Story, and it's parts 1, 2, and 3. And it's where you emphatically read through this text that was written, I believe, in 1965 by Chan Thomas. And I would say, why should people start with that? Why should they listen to your very animated and exciting and fun reading of basically what's happened and what's going to happen?
Well, it's the postlude. It's not the prelude. It's the postlude. And here it is. It's a 27-page pamphlet that came out 6 years later in 1971. And the reason it's interesting is because the Adam and Eve story has been recently involved in some CIA supposed cover-up. But it was actually a discussion about the text when it was written that was covered up, not the text itself. The text has always been available, and it's an esoteric book. Now, the postlude is even more esoteric and hard to get. It's a 27-page pamphlet by Chan Thomas that came out in 71, and it has the mechanism for the cosmic catastrophe discussed in the Adam and Eve story. Now, the reason this was probably discussed by the CIA and others when it came out was because if the book got traction in the mainstream, it might cause society to collapse, because the ideas contained within the pamphlet are so mind-blowing that people would want to be preparing maybe for the end of the earth or the end of the world. They wouldn't be working for some company for no purpose if in a few decades most of the planet was going to be destroyed. You know, you wouldn't be working on your vacation home so hard, because that would probably get washed away. You wouldn't be moving to the beach, things like this. So in order to keep society moving, they discussed, you know, putting the brakes on the book and the ideas. And that, I believe, is the beginning of the CIA's work in disinformation. In order for the CIA to be successful, everything that you know has to be incorrect. And at this point, they have been very successful at doing that. And not only that, the entire term conspiracy theory was developed by the CIA. And I believe the CIA invented this new flat earth movement and other things, perpetuating like geoengineering, when they knew. I mean, NASA and NOAA knew 12 years ago that contrails were getting longer, and they didn't know why, because they're looking at these satellite images and the contrails were more persistent and more persistent, and they looked into it. And then finally, the physics department said, it's cosmic rays. Here's the work of Svensmark. And then they launched the Cloud Project, and they proved that cosmic rays are causing jet contrails to sometimes go all the way across the whole country. And so then they perpetrated, I think they paid Dane Wigington over at Geoengineering Watch he partnered with them, and he perpetuated more lies. I mean, the guy is the number one chemtrail conspiracy theorist, and he's a proven fraud, and all of his early pictures were photoshopped. I mean, if there actually are chemtrails and they're doing it, why would you photoshop fakes? Wouldn't you want credibility? So you can't be that stupid unless it's on purpose to completely cloud up the truth and the fiction, because they're all together right in your face and you'll never know the truth, because we don't care. We're trying to confuse you so you go to work, pay your taxes, waste your life. All the way up to the tidal wave, all the way up to the very last alarm when they're all going underground, you're going to be driving home from work and be like, holy shit, is that a mile high wall of water? I mean, that's the only way I can think of it. So the postlude and the three-part series I did is basically a consensus. It's a summation of all of the cutting-edge scientific work that has gone on up to this point and how you would decipher those 27 pages. What does that mean for real? Does it really mean every 12,000 years everyone dies? No. And we know that scientifically that's never happened. The lowest the population on Earth ever got was after the Toba eruption, almost 70,000 years ago. Population went down to maybe as low as 7,000 humans. That's the estimate. But since then, we've had hundreds of catastrophes. We know about the catastrophe at 12,900 years ago that eliminated 65% of the megafauna in North America, but did not eliminate them in Africa, which is why we still have giraffes and rhinoceros and other crazy shit down there, but not over here. So we know that these catastrophes are localized. We know that there were 30 million Clovis people in North America, and they all disappeared overnight. So they probably died with the megafauna. Otherwise, I think that the Clovis people would have been able to keep the white man out of North America. They would have murdered them. They were amazing hunters. They could kill mammoth by the dozen. I think a couple dumb Spaniards would have been quickly handled by the Clovis, but they were missing. They were gone. The only people left here were a few hunters and gatherers that were probably the remnants of the few Clovis that made it. There were probably very few that made it, which is why the communities that rebounded in North America were very small, localized hunters and gatherers. They had no prior knowledge of the mounds, the mound builders, or who any of the native Indians in North America were. They just had no knowledge. They were just living there. Like, we don't know who did this. We're just hanging out and eating deer. So the postlude, if you want to know about the where we are as far as cosmic catastrophe and understanding the clock cycle, the one that I studied when I got into college, which we called the precession of the equinoxes. Some call it the great year. All cultures had a name for it, but that's a really good way to get started. And plus, I don't curse over at Magnetic Reversal News, so you can show it to younger kids. Maybe I say some, maybe it's PG-13. But I try to keep it pretty clean and scientific over there because what's going to happen over the coming years is that the population will hit a tipping point, and that once we 3% of the population is aware of the impending magnetic reversal, people are going to demand answers. They're going to want to know what the government is doing to save them. And when they find out nothing, what they've been doing is spending all their money to save the elite few, they're going to be pissed off. So these are interesting times we live in, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, it would be horrible to live when it's boring. So thankfully we don't. Yeah, and that's going to be quite the shock. I think something for, I'll call it like the neo-Aboriginal with their human instincts reemerging, and who have basically their you know, human divine intelligence reinvigorated and flowing, is that they know, of course, the government doesn't give a shit about you any more than Monsanto does. And all of humanity, too much of it, they keep looking up. Savior, save us, save us. Government, 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 regulate it, make it safe. I need a permit. Tell me it's okay. Pave the road. I mean, this is something I think humanity really needs to get over, is the self-reliance has been given to authority, and that's not going to work.
No, not short of a gigantic revolt. But I mean, I helped organize the March Against Monsanto 2011, 2012 worldwide march, the largest march against a multinational corporation ever conceived, probably hundreds of millions all at the same time, tilting the planet. No coverage, no one gave up, and the general public was generally pissed because we were blocking them from getting to work. It's sick how brainwashed the population is. Hey, look, if you are happy in your little rut going back and forth to your slave job, more power to you. But don't prevent those whose God consciousness is awakening from getting to some of those people, because they're literally brainwashed and locked into that system. It's very difficult to get this information out there. I think YouTube is doing a great job. A lot of people complain about the censorship on YouTube. I have not run into that. I mean, I say some crazy stuff. I am, you know, borderline, you could erase my channel, and yet they don't even demonetize me. So apparently they're making a lot of money off of what I'm saying. I'm helping their bottom line, and it's helping get this information out to those who want to listen. I realized a year ago that I'm not going to change anyone's mind that isn't ready. So I need to keep saying the same thing again and again and again. And then one day that person's going to hear this loud popping noise, and that'll be their head coming out of their ass for the very first time. That's my mission.
That is a great mission.
I'm going to run and do farm things, but I had a pleasure, dude, talking to you.
Okay, that is great. That is great. Well, hey, you know, before you go, do farm stuff, do real life. Tell us about LeakCon that you're doing, that you're going to be a part of, and yeah, let us know a little bit about that before you go.
Well, I'm going to need a big vacation after that because I'm getting no help on this. I'm organizing the entire event. I just got, before I talk to you, I just got done speaking with the event director over at the Marriott Tech Center in Denver, which is where the event will be held May 17th through the 19th. We have amazing guests. They have not all been announced. We just announced a special guest last night, Doug Vogt, who has recently been skyrocketed to fame in the cosmic catastrophe arenas because of his early work on the theory of multidimensional reality, is going to be joining us. He's a funny dude. I cannot wait to talk to that guy. But we have some of the top conspiracy people in the FBI, in the CIA. We're talking John D'Souza. He is what the X-Files was built around. He is the real Fox Mulder, 30 years experience in the FBI, top clearances with all that crazy X-Files. He's going to be doing private workshops with VIPs, so you literally will be his friend for the weekend. A global warmist who is also a cosmic catastrophist, Laird Scranton. Some people know him for his work with the Dogon and other esoteric cosmic catastrophe stuff. I know him from my work in Philly and Temple University. He's just an awesome dude, and he's way out there, and he has figured out that the ancients, the aboriginals, they know more shit than we could even begin to know now, and they don't even know how they know it. That is the crazy thing. How can a group of people be more advanced in their knowledge than us, and they don't even know how they're more advanced in their knowledge than us? It means that it goes way back. It goes back and back and back. And these events, time and time again, erase the information, and we don't know. Maybe we get to find the Ten Commandments in a cave, or we find a tablet, or... but we don't know where it came from. So that dude's awesome. I'm going to be speaking. Rex Baer will be there. He's the funniest conspiracy theory nut on the planet. And he's really trying to debunk the conspiracy theories. He's doing it in a scientific way. So he approaches all the crazy ideas with an open mind, and then he quickly shuts the door because most people are just making shit up. So Rex will be there. Ice Age Farmer will be there, Christian Westbrook. I'm flying David Dubine in from the other side of the world, coming in from Singapore to Denver just for the event. So he's going to be exhausted. I'm actually bringing him in a day early so he can just rest and smoke pot for a day. So he'll be there. A lot of people want to meet him, almost as never in the U.S. So this is going to be a pretty cool event. Plus, we've got other people that I'm not remembering right now. Hemp Lucid is our main sponsor. We're going to have amazing tables. Brady Shalley does amazing art. I'm sure I'm missing people, and I apologize.
No, that sounds great.
After this event, I'm going to take some time off. So we only have about 18 VIP, 40 general admission tickets left. And then we're going to seal off the event.
Well, you mentioned finding the Ten Commandments, and I hope we do, and we find out that there's actually 11, and the 11th one says, dab with Diamond and listen to his daily disaster reports and pull your head out of your ass. Boom!
I love it. I love it. It's been a pleasure, dude. Thank you very much for having me on.
It has been. Thanks a lot, and I'll send you a link to this when we get it posted.
Sweet!
Thanks for listening to Radiant Creators. Check out more content at radiantcreators.com. If you like the show, give it a like. Share this. comment, keep the conversation going. You can also find us at alternatecurrentradio.com, where there's this show and a lot more.